key economic releases affecting fixed income yields. Insights into sectors influencing fixed income securities. How AAM plans to capitalize on these themes for your fixed income portfolio. The Portfolio Fix is a podcast series featuring members of AAM's investment and portfolio management team. We will discuss the timely issues affecting the fixed income investments of our insurance clients.
Welcome to another episode of the Portfolio Fix, a podcast series from AAM. My name is Patrick McGeever, and I'm a member of AAM's investment team. Today, as usual, I'll be speaking with Marco Bravo, who will provide AAM's latest views of the economy. And then I'll be joined by Mike Ashley, who will provide us some thoughts on why he thinks the waste industry is a good place to invest in this turbulent environment. So welcome, Marco.
Thanks, Pat.
There was plenty of economic data to chew on last week, but obviously everyone is focusing on inflation and how that might affect future Fed action. So were there any economic releases this week that helped you better understand the inflationary environment that we're in?
Yeah, there was the what's known as the PCE price index, and that's assumed to be the Fed's preferred measure of inflation relative to the CPI index, which is the other inflation measure. We did see signs of inflation easing, at least relative to the previous month. So, for example, to put some numbers behind that, the headline PCE index increased by just 0.2% month over month after increasing 0.9% last month. So definitely an easing. And then core, when you strip out the more volatile food and energy sectors, PCE was up 0.3%. That's roughly the same as the previous month. And then when you look at it on a year-over-year basis, PCE, both the PCE and the core fell by 0.3 percentage points on a year-over-year basis relative to previous month. So some signs of easing, but I think it's worth noting that when you compare to CPI, that PCE has a smaller weight to shelter, and we know prices there are rising. And PCE has a greater weight to medical prices, where we know that prices there are easing. So that may help explain kind of the much stronger easing that we're seeing in the PCE index relative to CPI. But nonetheless, some positive, we believe, some positive news on the inflation front.
Yeah, certainly. I didn't realize the difference between the two indices, so that's interesting to know. All right, so a better inflationary news, but on growth, not so much. We saw first quarter GDP was revised down to -1.5% from -1.3%. What's behind that, given that the consumer still appears healthy? And maybe if you could, do we have an updated outlook on economic growth?
Sure. And I think it's worth just kind of putting into perspective again, kind of what drove the negative number in the first quarter, and that largely due to net trade and inventory investment. When you strip those out, the GDP was still fairly strong, and that's really being driven by consumption. So the modest revision for first quarter, now down 1.5%, reflects a little bit downward revision to inventory investment, which was offset by an upward revision to consumer spending. So consumers in the first quarter spending was up 3.1%. It's fairly strong. And just given some of the recent data on spending, It's on track to continue to increase at that pace, if not higher. So for example, today, personal spending in April was up 0.9%, and that follows a very strong previous month of spending. You know, last week we saw retail sales come in, and if you look at the average for retail sales over the last 3 months, up 18% on an annualized basis. So there's a strong, you know, strong momentum to personal spending and consumer spending to start the second quarter. Many economists believe that the strength of the consumer continues to be kind of fueled by the savings over the pandemic period, and now consumers are finally out there spending again.
Okay.
So the outlook for growth right now, you know, if you look at second quarter, the expectation is we see a strong rebound from the first quarter negative number. 3% is the official consensus estimate annualized for Q2. But the risks there definitely seem skewed to the upside, just given the strong showing by the consumer, net trade. We're seeing some strong export data that should kind of reverse what we saw in Q1, and that inventory number we may see, you know, kind of the opposite effect. So Q2 should be a fairly strong number. When you look at it at the year as a whole, right now the growth for 2022 GDP is up 1.6% Q4 over Q4. So that's down, you know, from where we were estimating it 3 months ago, and definitely slower than 2021. So slowing growth, but continued positive growth, I think, is the message, at least for 2022.
Okay. Well, that leads into my next question then. The 10-year yields have declined by 50 basis points in just over 2 weeks. Given what you just said about still pretty healthy economy, what's driving this move? Is it lower inflation expectations? Is it weaker growth expectations, or a flight to higher quality, or something else that I haven't mentioned?
I think it's all of the above. So if you look at inflation expectations, they've come down. The Fed likes to look at what's known as the five-year forward break-even rate as a measure of kind of what the market's implied inflation expectation is. And that's currently sitting at 2.3%. That's down about 40 basis points from its high. So inflation expectations have come down. As we normally see in a tightening cycle, the long end begins to kind of price in the increasing risk of recession. And I think that's part of what's driving 10-year and 30-year yields lower here. You know, what we've seen as far as what the market is expecting out of the Fed, today, markets is expecting a lower terminal rate for Fed funds. You know, so if we look at 3 month euro dollars, for example, 1 month ago that was peaking at 3.4%. Today it's peaking at around 3.1%, so about 30 basis points lower. And that could suggest that the market believes you know, financial conditions are going to tighten to a point that the Fed will have to kind of stop and assess the situation. That financial conditions are getting to the point where the risk of recession is increasing.
Okay.
And then I think, you know, some flight to quality that we've seen, although this week, a little bit different feeling. It's been a risk on week, equities up, credit spreads tighter, and really not a lot of movement in treasury yields except for the short end that's down about 10 basis points. That reflective of that, you know, lower expectation for Fed funds rate.
Okay, Marco. So you mentioned that the Fed might stop to reevaluate the situation at some point. Do you care to guess on when that might actually take place? Is that a summer 2022 event or a 4Q 2022 event?
Well, that's a tough question, trying to guess at what the Fed is thinking. If you go by what recent comments from the Fed and the minutes from the last meeting is, they're going to do whatever it takes to get inflation lower. And whatever it takes seems to suggest, at least from Powell's comments, that they need to get the Fed funds rate above neutral. So some number above 2.5%. No one really knows what neutral rate is, but it's been assumed to be somewhere in that 2.5% range. We think the Fed's going to raise rates 50 basis points in June, probably followed by another 50 basis points in July. So that gets rates kind of in that 1.7 to 2%. So not near neutral yet. And following the June and July meetings, at least what the market is pricing in, 25 basis points at each of the remaining three. So that gets the Fed funds rate to that neutral rate. So we don't think they stop this year. And possibly at the end of the year, perhaps they take a pause and see what the impact on the markets is. Of course, this outlook for Fed funds is so dependent on what the data is showing and how markets are reacting and how financial conditions are reacting. But right now, there's really nothing to suggest that they're going to stop this year from raising rates unless inflation really begins to come down strongly. Then the Fed may take a pause. So long-winded guess to your
No.
question is that they don't stop this year.
That's actually terrific information, Marco. We'll continue to monitor the inflation data as we progress towards the next Fed meeting, which I think is on June 15th. So, thank you.
You bet.
Next, we're joined by Mike Ashley, co-head of Investment Grade Strategy. So welcome, Mike.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for having me today.
Sure. So it's an incredibly challenging environment right now. We're coming out of a pandemic, although China is employing a zero COVID policy right now. So that's affecting supply chains. Russia has invaded Ukraine, and the Western world has employed sanctions on them, causing prices to spike. And the Fed is expected to tighten as aggressively as they have in a generation. So, given this backdrop, in the corporate group, we're being highly selective. You've identified the waste industry as one place we should be investing in right now. What are two or three of the characteristics that make it appealing?
Yeah, definitely. This is an area that is smaller in size to the index, but some really solid names that we like right now. Some of the things that we like about the industry, one is that we really consider it a sort of an oligopoly. The top three players in this sector, waste management, public services, and waste connections. Depending on how you look at the total market, make up 30 to 40% of the market. That's their market share altogether, with waste management being the biggest. And that's that really, to us, doesn't eliminate M&A risk, but it does from a mega sort of opportunity type of risk. It also, the waste industry is also domestic, in that there's no impact from the Russia or Europe, no currency issues with this sector. Another couple things that we like about it, it's contract based. So, and they roll the contracts through staggered so that there's no, large contracts coming due, a lot of large contracts coming due at one time. Those contracts are anywhere from 1 to 5 years, just based on the end market, the customer base there. And very low churn rates, less than 10%. Customers typically don't want to change their waste providers, and that provides some good comfort and stability in growth, revenue growth, and margins. We really it really is a utility-like essential service. Very predictable volumes. Long term, it looks like about a 1% type growth, and add on M&A and those sort of things, and you get to a pretty decent volume growth number, not adding on pricing, which we might talk about later. But it's a pretty stable, easygoing, predictable sector, and that's why we like it right now.
Okay. One thing you didn't mention is how it copes with inflation. So that's something that we're all monitoring very closely right now. What are the waste industry's key costs, and are they able to pass on those costs to the end consumer?
Yes, so some of the main costs are labor, which they really, that's a large cost of theirs. It's somewhere around 25% of sales is their labor cost. And so they've been seeing the same kind of labor inflation that other sectors have. Just on that front, they're not really able to pass through anything on labor costs, but sort of the talk and the analysis that I've seen and comments from management teams is that inflation piece looks to be leveling out now. So that's a positive. Some things that they can pass through and can stabilize is fuel cost is one, and that's anywhere from 3 to 4% of sales, and really they can manage the volatility there, not the whole cost itself, but they do this through, been doing this through surcharges or hedging. The other thing is just, basically just inflation in general. They're able to pass through those higher labor inflation costs in their contracts, and they're, depending on the company, they're able to pass through, could be, 40% of their contracts are able to put in sort of CPI, or other inflation adjustments, in the environmental services industry, and they're able to push those through. It's backward looking, so some of those prices and contracts, when they come up, we'll see it, some of those flow through in the next couple quarters, but nonetheless, they are able to pass on inflation, high inflation, in some of those contracts. So that's another positive as well.
Okay, that is positive. Given there's uncertainty about the economy right now, more and more people are talking about a potential recession in the upcoming quarters. I'm wondering, how are the balance sheets of the constituents in the waste sector?
Yeah, good question. They are, I kind of characterize as where they should be for their ratings. And there really is not a lot of attention on the balance sheets, on leverage for the waste companies, so to speak. I think they're very comfortable sort of in that high triple B, low single A type of rating. So they kind of monitor and manage the balance sheets in that way. Most of their free cash flow, again, very predictable, very stable. Margins are EBITDA margins for the industry are kind of around 30%. So they produce a lot of free cash flow, but they're spending a lot on CapEx as well. And that's just the nature of the industry. It's an expensive industry. There's a lot of upkeep and add-ons throughout the year that need to be monitored and executed. So they do spend a lot of money on that, and what they do spend the free cash flow on are, you know, things for shareholders, dividends, share buybacks, and then a pretty predictable amount gets spent on M&A, and, you know, to the tune of, you know, $500 billion a year, depending on the year and depending on the opportunities. But it's pretty typical for $2 or $3 billion transaction in this industry, and that's taken in pretty easily, financed easily, and then managed on leverage front easily as well, so that we're kind of staying around less than 3x leverage, you know, when they do an M&A deal, it goes above, and then they work it off, so it gets down to that 3x or less than 3x kind of leverage. So okay. Balance sheets are in good shape. They're kind of where they should be. Liquidity is very good. All have access to large bank lines. And again, predictable cash flow characteristics from the industry are good, are strong.
Yeah. It does sound like utility fee-based, 30% margins, leverage around, you know, 3.5, 4x. That's very similar to what utilities have. So, So maybe we can close this out with anything you can tell us about this sector that's unique from an ESG perspective.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity to improve ESG scores for the industry, especially in the environmental front, where this industry has kind of gotten a black eye in the past about landfills and what they do with recyclables and all those sort of things. Especially they have large fleets of trucks out there that are diesel run, and that's changing. You know, the environmental services waste industry they're moving towards natural gas powered vehicles or trucks. That's going to be good for the environment. And in fact, in a lot of cases, they're using their landfills, and they've converted, they've been doing the gas to energy landfills, using the methane from the landfills and producing that. And at the end of the day, it becomes fuel for a lot of their natural gas powered vehicles. Hmm. So that's a win-win for the industry, I think. Yeah. Other things they're doing, they're converting capped landfills and making those useful areas for the environment. Promoting recycling, and recycling's been a good area of growth for these companies, given where, corrugated paper is and plastics are and that sort of thing right now. That's been a good area, and a lot of other things, but those are some of the main things that we're excited about for the industry.
Okay, Mike. Well, we have an industry that's an oligopoly. It's insulated from any type of international threats. It's fee-based. They have good balance sheets, and there's plenty of ESG opportunities. So there's definitely lots to like here.
Agreed.
Good. So, well, thanks for all that information and taking the time to speak with me. I appreciate it. Also want to thank you, the listener, for taking the time to listen to our podcast. If you have any questions, please reach out to your portfolio manager or our marketing team at aamcompany.com. During our next podcast, I'll be joined by Marco and a member of our investment team to discuss a timely issue affecting the fixed income markets. Thank you.